Yes, that was Kate Price and Borderlands. And just before that was Robin Williamson and his Merry Band and Border Tango. So anyway, right now I do have Laura Melgarejo on the phone. Can you hear me, Laura?
I can, for sure.
Oh, great. You're coming in loud and clear. And you're down in San Francisco.
That's correct. So I guess I'm going to start by introducing myself again. So my name is Laura Melgarejo. I'm a community organizer at Poder. And Poder is an acronym for People Organizing to Demand Environmental and Economic Rights. We're located in the Mission in San Francisco here, right on Valencia Street on the Mission District in San Francisco. And just a little bit about me.
Yes.
I'm a community organizer with Poder. I've been working with Poder for about 7 years now. And I started at Poder as a youth organizer. So at Poder, we do a lot of things, right? We do from youth empowerment, youth leadership, member leadership, to like organizing in our communities to demand environmental health, to demand access to affordable housing, to stand up for our immigrant rights communities, and we do a little bit about everything. So I started as a youth organizer back in 2003. I did that youth program for 2 years at Poder, and then eventually I became a part-time staff, doing a little bit of some of the work around the tobacco project that we had. And then, you know, as the time passes, I've been taking different responsibilities, such as working with youth. And currently, at Poder, the main project that I'm working on is Poder is part of the San Francisco Immigrant Legal and Education Network. And this network is like 12 organizations working together here in San Francisco, trying to bring legal advising and also educational information about Know Your Rights in that community, in our communities in San Francisco. And primarily, that's my role. I'm a community organizer, organizing around, standing up for immigrant rights, and providing a lot of educational workshops for community members, for them to just know, you know, what are their rights in case of an immigration raid, what to do if they get stopped by the police. I also have done a lot of work with 8540 students. For those of you who don't know what 8540 means, it's undocumented youth, undocumented students going to college and accessing higher education. So that's been also part of my focus within my work in Poder. But
Is that a California version of the DREAM Act?
The AB 540 is actually a little bit different than the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act is a legislation that wants to legalize students. And AB 540 is a law that passed back in 2001, and this law basically says that for undocumented students, they have the right to go to college and pay pay in-state tuition. You might not know this, but maybe a lot of people know this as well. Undocumented students, when they want to go to college, they have to pay their student fee and matriculations and all those things as if they were international students, which is all like 3 times or 4 times more than what in-state students pay for education.
Oh, wow. That's very substantial.
Yes. So this is, we're talking about, I'm not really good at math, but we're talking about like paying like $60 for a class as in-state tuition as paying like $180 for a class.
Oh, my goodness.
That's, it's a big difference. So AB 540, this law allows, helps maybe undocumented students to pay in-state tuition and, you know, continue with their education and accessing higher education as they wish to.
But that's a very high bar to jump over, isn't it? Obviously, being illegal, you know, you can't get very good, well-paying jobs. So, I mean, it seems incredibly difficult.
It is very difficult for undocumented students. I work with a lot of these youth who I have known people who graduated from prestigious college like Stanford, UC Berkeley, UCLA. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't pay their tuition out of their own pocket by working like two to three jobs while they're going to school. Mm-hmm. And when they're finished their education, they're like okay, what do I do next? You know, I don't have a social security number. I can't really apply for a job because they're going to ask me for basic things like a driver's license if I need to move from my job to another places, you know. So it's extremely very, very difficult for them. However, there's many, like hundreds of thousands of students who are in this situation, who are going to school, who are getting their educational careers and degrees, and who eventually, when they're done, they're like just there in the limbo, like, where do I go next? What do I do next? But this is something that, that's why the Dream Act is something that a lot of the students that I work with are been working on that campaign, just pushing forward, because the reality is that a lot of them came when they were babies, when they had nothing to say about their future. They don't know other places, just the United States. They don't know back home. They don't know what it looks like. They don't know what it's like. And eventually they're in this situation where, like, I can't really go back to where I was born because I don't know that place. And my life is here, and I went to school here, and I graduated from college, and I want to pursue my education in a higher degree, but it's more money, which I don't have, and I can't even get a job because I don't have a social security number. Right. So that's a reality for a lot of our students here in California and throughout the United States, not just here in California.
Well, exactly, yes. I was just speaking to Zalika Rodriguez before, and she said there was at least 4 million undocumented immigrants in California alone.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of people. Now, just like me, you're an immigrant to America, and you're born in Mexico. What is your story of how you got here, and how did you get to be what you're doing now?
Sure, I'm glad that you asked the question. Sometimes, you know, there's a lot of labels and a lot of stereotypes about why people come to the United States. And I'm going to start by saying that if my family had a choice, we wouldn't be here. Mm. My father, for many, many generations, we survived out of farming. Mm. My entire family used to raise corn and farm corn and any other veggies to, you know, sustain our families, take care of our land, and survive. However, after the trade agreements, when all these, like, NAFTA and all those things passed, mm-hmm. the global economy really affected the local and small businesses in Mexico.
Oh.
So things like that, like the really root causes of immigration come through to things like that. And eventually my dad had to leave. We had to sell our land and try to look for a better opportunities for our family to survive. What happens is that the corn that my dad was producing, we weren't selling that corn because it was competing with the corn from the United States that was coming in and out into our market.
Right.
So it was very difficult and very challenging for us to survive back then. So my dad already, you know, he tried to look for opportunities for my family to survive and also to provide for education. Since I was in Mexico, I knew that I wanted to study. I knew I wanted to do something with my life. And unfortunately, after my dad had to sell our land and not having a way to sustain ourselves, he decided to move. And a few years later, we came to be all united as a family.
Oh, wow. Yeah, must have been very difficult being apart and not knowing what was going to happen.
Most definitely. It was extremely difficult. However, we are a very hardworking family, so it was a cultural shock for me. I grew up and I was raised in a very small town in Mexico in a farm. So coming to the United States and going to school and learning, you know, a second language and getting used to all these different ways of life was very difficult, not just for me, but also for my entire family.
Well, yes, indeed. That's interesting, really, that in America, everyone was complaining that NAFTA and things were going to take jobs away from America, yet it also caused jobs to be drawn away in Mexico.
Right.
Just sounds like it was a very flawed policy if that was occurring.
Yeah, unfortunately, again, I really invite all your audience to really do the research and find out what exactly the NAFTA and all these policies of free trade agreements did to our economy, not just here, but also in Mexico. In a way, like, I'm sure people are familiar with all the maquiladoras or sweatshops within the border. Like, because of this trade agreement, like, it produces a few jobs in Mexico, but let's think about what kind of jobs are out there. Are there, like, good-paying jobs? No. Do they offer benefits? No. Do they pay the minimum wage? Not even. So, all these things, sometimes we don't see in the media, sometimes we don't critically analyze, but for people who have lived through it and experienced it, we can talk out of from our experience, right? So I really, really invite all your audience to really do a little research and find out, like, how eventually these policies created a mess for most of us. However, sometimes what we see in the media is how fruitful are they because of the goods that come in and out and because of the jobs and because of other things. But let's be critical about it and understand how really this is affecting most people in third world countries like Mexico and how people for most of the time are forced to leave because they don't have a choice to either stay in their homeland or try to look for better opportunities to survive.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's not as if so many people do it in on a whim, you know, to leave their home country and their families. That it's the toughest decision you can make.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get after growing up in the Mission District? What inspired you to take up organizing and working in that way?
Sure. Just a little bit about, as I was saying, my dad was a farmer.
Yeah.
And all my family, and not just my dad, but my uncles, my cousins, everyone in my family, even myself. So when we were back in Mexico and all these free trade agreements passed, and it was affecting not just my family, but my entire town, I remember my father always taking me to meetings and saying, we're going to go and talk to, you know, so-and-so, and we're gonna talk about alternatives for our families to survive. So we're going to talk a lot, and so bring a lot of water. I was just like, okay, Dad. So I kind of saw that role of my father, you know, just trying to find solutions, trying to work with our local government or our politicians to find solutions for working families back in Mexico. So I saw that in my father, although he's a very shy man and very quiet. So I didn't see that happening. I mean, I never thought that he would be such a leader and such a outspoken man when it came down to protect his family. So I saw that a little bit, and then about my dad. And eventually when we moved out to the United States and I started my schooling, I saw a lot of injustices. I was like, why is it that, you know, like when I came here, I learned that undocumented students couldn't really go to school because they don't have access to all this like financial support and like grants or loans. I was like, how come the students just want to go to school and study? So I was like, this is not right. And one of my friends in high school, she said, you know what, I'm a community organizer and I'm working at Poder. I was like, huh? What's that? You organize people in that community? I didn't really understand what that means. So I got invited to a meeting at Poder with some of the youth organizers, and I was introduced to the work that they do and how do they do it and the skills that they learn and, like, the political knowledge that they gain out of participating in Poder. And I decided that I wanted to be involved. And the first project I remember that we worked on was about having a park open for children to play after school, which is like the park on Folsom Park in Niños Unidos. It was already there, but the office hours that they had was kind of really not very flexible for the kids to play.
Yeah.
And then we start organizing among other issues and just learning a lot about how our environment plays a key role into like our health and to our well-being. And if we don't have access to healthy food, how it's going to affect our diet, how it's going to affect our moods and all those things. So that's how I start organizing. And I went to college. I have a bachelor's in health education, which is a career that has a great focus on social justice. So I'm a big believer of social justice and social change. And just by being introduced to Poder and working with wonderful coworkers that I have, I learned a lot, and I felt like this is what I want to do for a living. And I was like, it's really cool that I get to, it's very phenomenal. I get to work with a lot of people, and I like what I do, and I get paid for it.
Oh, wow.
I have my degree in health education, and again, it was a great emphasis. The program has a great emphasis on social justice. And a lot of what I do at Poder is thinking that social justice is going to come one day or another, and that we have to start working for it so that future generations have more access to things that right now might be difficult for people who are living right now, like in this kind of times when everything is so hard and difficult because of the economy and other things that are going on.
Exactly. Now, it's interesting, the name PODA, People Organizing to Demand Environmental and Economic Rights. It's interesting you put environmental before even economic rights. That is becoming a big issue, I think, isn't it?
It is. As I said before, like most people, maybe we don't feel like our environment is such a big determinant of our health and our access to healthy jobs for ourselves, healthy food for our people in our community. So our environment plays a big, big role in our future. And if we don't have access to healthy environment, healthy jobs, healthy schools, healthy churches, healthy whatever we pray or go to school, it's going to really impact our community's development and our community's understanding of how, like, other issues, not just our environment, but other issues broader than that can affect our health and our access, our ability to access different services within that community.
Right, exactly. We're listening to Laura Melgarajo, and she is with PODA, People Organizing to Demand Environmental and Economic Rights in San Francisco.
That's right.
And, one of the things you do is lobby, obviously, apart from working with youth, you're actually going to Sacramento and Washington. What are you doing in those respects?
Sure. Unfortunately, we don't have the capacity or resources to go that far. But some of the things that we do is local. We pretty much always... We're advocating at City Hall, talking to our supervisors about things like why we need a healthy environment. Also, as I mentioned before, Poder is part of the San Francisco Immigrant Legal and Education Network. And every year we have what is called a Family Immigrant Day, where we go to City Hall and we do site visits to our 11 supervisors and talk to them about why is it so important that we have this, like, free legal services for our community members in San Francisco. So we go talk to them, present, our demands of community. We feel like we deserve, have access to these free legal services and educational services because it's so expensive to pay for attorneys when you're dealing with any legal case.
Right.
So we go, we talk to them, we ask them also, to allocate funding into our work because everything is free, and then we also need resources to pay our lawyers, to pay our staff, to pay all the things that I know people understand what I'm talking about. So we go and talk to them on terms of immigration rights. We go and lobby for our youth rights. We go and lobby for healthy environment and affordable housing within our communities. San Francisco is a very expensive city, and most of our working families, Latino and working families in San Francisco, need to have two jobs in order to pay for, you know, affordable housing, for a house that they can afford. So we always go and lobby for things that are affecting our community directly, and how can we all work together, you know, as people power, and having our politicians to understand the needs of our community.
Right. How do you find the supervisors and mayor's reaction to you? Are they helpful?
You know, this cycle or year, we had a few supervisors who are very supportive of the cause for our immigrant rights, for our youth rights, for affordable housing, for environmental issues. They're very supportive. But I do remember, especially back in the days when I was just a teenager, it was difficult to even set up appointments and talk to them or go and do a site visit. But this supervisors that we have right now, a lot of them are very supportive, and a lot of them come from like community organizing, have that background, or have needs in the communities that they are supervising, and so they're very understanding of what are the community needs. And for the most part, I will say that it's been an easy way for us to communicate with them, because they understand where are we coming from.
Right. No, that's good. It's good to know San Francisco does keep their end up as much as they can.
Yeah, you know, and if they don't listen to us, we're always going to do rallies and advocate, and they know us. We're loud, we're strong, and we're always standing up for our community rights.
No, that's true. In San Francisco, if you make a noise, they do notice.
Yeah.
Very true. I lived there 30 years, so I know what what it's like.
Well, everyone is more than welcome to join us. If you believe in what we're working for, come and join us. We're always doing rallies, we're always doing community actions and demonstrations to, you know, show our politicians that we are here and we're fighting and demanding rights for our communities.
Well, that's right. Now, you have been working on the DREAM Act.
We have. Our work with the DREAM Act has been, again, a little bit limited due to our staff capacity and resources. We do work with a lot of students who I've been helping them and supporting them into the different actions and the different rallies and site visits to supervisors and things like that to get us local support so that we can move forward. A lot of what we have done is training the youth, you know, to do public speaking, to do media work, to develop those skills that they need to be able to present strong talking points about the things that they're advocating for. Last year, we worked with a lot of students from especially Mission High School here in the Mission District.
Yeah.
Just informing them about what is this legislation about, what can we do to support it. And we collect a lot of signatures that one of the teachers from Mission High School took to Washington, D.C., and sent it to Gutierrez and other politicians so that they know how important it is for our communities to pass something that's going to support all these youth or babies or whoever are here undocumented and they just want to go to school. And when I say babies, I'm referring back to people who, again, came to the United States being a baby without having nothing to say about their future, because they weren't even talking yet.
Right.
So some of those works, some of that has been the work that we have done in terms of, you know, doing a lot of asking for petitions, supporting our youth leaders to develop the leadership skills, and supporting Los Angeles. They have Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., they have a very strong, groups of dreamers, I believe that's how they call. Oh. Where, like, they are organizing hardcore every day, and we try to support as much as we can with the limited resources that we have.
Right, right. Now, what are the actual kids saying about the situation? How do they see it? Are they getting frustrated, depressed? And what's the effect on the family? What's the stress going on there?
Most definitely. A lot of the youth that I work with are like, well, I'm just, you know, going to graduate from high school and that's it. I'm not going to even apply for City College or a four-year institution. And they're very talented, very motivated, very, like, smart teenagers with, like, I see a lot of potential in them. Mm-hmm. But all this thing about, it's very intimidating for them to even send that college application when they're asking for security, social security numbers. And, you know, that's when we come and, like, we train them. Try not to think about this. Just send your application. Send it with the AB-540 form so that they know that you don't have a social security number. And that's when all these questions come up. And what's after? I'm going to go to college, but then my friend so-and-so graduated, and he or she's not even working because they don't have a social security number. But still, a lot of them are very determined to be like, well, I'm going to make a change. And it's going to be hard for me to get there. It's going to be maybe I have to work 3 times more than, like, a regular student.
Right.
To get me to the point where, like, I'm getting my college degree, but I'm going to do it. And I've seen a lot of, like, networking relationships among them where, like, a few of them are, I don't want to do it anymore, and a few others are like, we need to do it. This is for our family. This is for our community. This is for all the immigrant students who are out there and they feel alone. So they form this kind of friendship where, like, they support each other. I mean, I'm talking specifically about a group of high school students in Mission High School mm-hmm. that I know. And I've seen it with a lot of other friends that I have. As I mentioned before, I have a few friends who graduated from, like, prestigious universities such as Stanford, UCLA, and UC Berkeley, mm-hmm. Not having a social. A lot of them are working in McDonald's. A lot of them are working in a gas station. And don't get me wrong, I believe that every job is as long as you're working, it's a decent job. But some of their fears and anxiety comes down when, like, I didn't go to school to work here, you know? But they continue pursuing, and there are actually some of the students that are, like, hardcore organizing so that the DREAM Act passes and provides a path for legalization for a lot of these students who are in this situation.
Well, that's it. Again, and the family stress that must cause, because it sort of splits them with the family in some ways.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, sure. Even within the family, like I was saying before, San Francisco is a very expensive city. And not even just San Francisco, but most of our families work like 2 or 3 jobs to support themselves. Mm-hmm. And imagine how hard it is for students feeling stressed out for not being able to have resources to pay for college and then going home and not seeing their parents because their parents are working very hard to try to provide that financial assistance that they don't get in school. It's very, very stressful and very sad for a lot of them. Again, a lot of these students are like 4.0, like mm-hmm. A-plus students, straight up, A. But they don't have the financial support. They don't have all these things that they need in order to go to college. And eventually creates a lot of stress within in the families because they don't know what to do and their parents don't know how to support their kids. For most of the time, it's just a very, very, very stressful situation for both the parents and the students.
Well, yes, indeed. And what do you see coming up over the next, say, 6 months? What things are moving forward? You got any picture of that?
Well, with the DREAM Act, we see every day more support. And not just with the DREAM Act, like surveys and research that I have done, you know, like 2 out of 3 Americans support, like, giving immigration access for a legal status. So I believe that it's not just undocumented people who are calling for example, the Dream Act to pass or for a comprehensive immigration reform to pass. I feel like a lot of people feel our immigrant families are working families that work very hard every day. They keep a lot of places open for people to go and eat, for people to go and work. So a lot of nannies are taking care of the babies in the house. So I believe that a lot of people are really looking forward for something to pass and an opportunity for all these families to find a path for legalization. We definitely need to work together and find workable solutions for all of us.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's there's so many different levels to work at, you know, from just the grassroots streets level to city government, state to federal. I mean, it's it must be very convoluted to work with all those different agencies to make them all move in the same direction.
Definitely. Like you said, we have to start. Sometimes we feel like we need first to start here locally so that we can move, you know, regionally, and so that we can move nationally before we actually are talking about impacting a higher level. I feel like the cause that we are working for is what kind of keeps different communities working together, because we believe in something that's it's justice for our immigrant communities, for our working families, for our students. And here and there, you know, people might agree to disagree because right. We're humans and we have different points of view. But most definitely, we feel like San Francisco has, and a lot of our community organizations here in San Francisco, not just Poder, but a lot of our the networks that we have worked on, Forum and Allies, we feel like that's the first thing that we need to do. We need to start in the ground so that we can move up to the up. And get what we need to get at the national level.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's a slow process, unfortunately.
It's a very slow process. It's very hard, sometimes very tiring. But our people power is always here. Like I was saying before, there's always someone motivating each other to continue with the struggle, because it's very, very long. And like you might remember, like back in, when was this? 3-4 years ago, when lots of people came out of March and marched on the street and demanding a comprehensive immigration reform. We haven't seen that in the last 2-3 years, because people are just feeling a little bit tired and feeling like, well, what's the point of me walking out when nothing's going to change anyway? But that's when community organizations have to continue working with our members and continue informing them what's going on, what's happening, what's new, what can we do as community to keep pushing and moving forward for this cause that brings us all together.
Well, indeed. You could say what your webmails or emails address is for people to contact you or learn more about your organization.
Sure. So Poder is located at 474 Valencia Street, and our phone number is 415-431-4210. Once again, it's 415-431-4210. For people who feel better checking us out on that internet, you can go to www.poder, and poder is P-O-D-E, sorry, let's say it all over again.
Okay.
www.poderesf, it's P-O-D-E-R-S-F.org. Again, three W's, P-O-D-E-R-S-F.org, and just feel free to call us, email us. We have a party coming up. It's a pachanga. We call it pachanga.
Oh.
To raise money for our youth program and just in general for our organization. It's going to be here in the Mission. It's on September 10. We have a flyer in our website. Last year we had a phenomenal event. A lot of our community members came to support Poder. We're a very small organization that do great things and big things, even though we're small. And we had a great time last year. Again, it's our pachanga, which is literally our party, to raise money. It's friendly. It's open to all ages. It's family-oriented. We have some, you know, Latin music playing, as well as some hip-hop, a little bit of everything, so that everyone can enjoy some of the music that we're going to be playing. So people, please feel free to callers. We have tickets for sale now. We have a flyer online. And it's for a good cause. Again, it's to raise money for a youth program as well as for our organization.
Oh,
that's coming up on September 10th, so don't miss it because you're going to regret it.
It sounds a fun one. Yeah, I'll have to come on in.
For sure.
And well, thank you so much, Laura Melgarejo, and really appreciate you talking to my listeners here on Cows Radio in Sonoma County.
Most definitely.
And really keep up the great work, and we really need people like you, passionate and really believe in what they're doing, and eventually the right things will come around.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm just going to repeat our phone number for people.
Yes.
Please, if you have any questions, if you want to come down to our Pachanga, our party, which is going to be on September 10th, our phone number is 415-431-4210. And our website, where you can find more information, is www.poderesf.org. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Laura. Good luck.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.